Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, June 5th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, we did have a little reversal in gold today. Again, more pressure on gold, but it did come down or up off its lows. Gold currently 520 to the downside at 1172, having a low of 1161. Silver's right at 1618 off the low of 1587. Platinum was down 5 at 1098, breaking through that 1000 level. Palladium down 4 at 754. Lots of pressure on the metals this week. USDX higher 0.83 at 96.33. Crude oil up 96 at 58.96. And the paper markets today, I think it was pretty much a mixed bag of sorts. You have the Dow down 56 points at 17,849. The NASDAQ was up 10 at 5,068. S&P down 3, 2,092. Whoa, 10-year yield, 2.40%, 2.40%. Pressure on the euro, of course, 1.11. European markets, Germany was down. The DAX was down 1.25%. London was down just a little under 1%. Hong Kong down 1% on the Asian markets. And Japan basically unchanged with just a few points to the downside. So a lot of pressure on those. Boy, Newmont Mining got hammered. They were down 3.5% today. Strange markets, a lot of volatility, and you know what happens with volatile markets, Al? It's going to go in one direction sooner or later, and I think the pressures that we've seen in the paper markets will be heading more to the downside. There's certainly more and more commentaries and opinions that are certainly being released in that projection, and today we saw the let me see if I can bring up the numbers here. Of course, I can't because everything else is going crazy on my website. But the U.S. economy created about 280,000 jobs in May, and the unemployment rate increased slightly to 5.5%. And wages showed some growth, about 8 cents an hour. So again,
yippee,
this,
8 cents an hour.
8 cents.
That's
an hour.
A whole $3.60. $3.20 a week. You add that to the money they're saving on gasoline with the fall of the gas prices, and boy, we should have this
economy
stimulated and running in no time at all.
But this report did send the bond yields, as we saw, surging. The little bit of wage increase, of course, indicates some inflation pushing towards the Fed's target and blah, 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 blah. And so you can either believe the numbers or not believe the numbers. But again, you still have a lot of people that are unemployed. And if you look at the U6 number, the U6, that's what counts those that are working part-time for economic reasons. And the unemployed who have not looked for work in the past month, that's holding steady at 10.8%. So, you know, a big difference between 10.8 and 5.5. So it'll show you exactly, you know, where we're at on the economy. And if you ask anyone out there, you have a lot of folks still, you know, they're not they're having a difficult time finding jobs. And, of course, service industries led the way for May. They added 63,000 positions, while leisure and hospitality, they grew by 57,000. And that's probably the big report on the day. And, you know, it's just another part of the illusion. And that sort of eliminates Christine Lagarde of the IMF yesterday had mentioned that the Federal Reserve should wait until 2016 to even consider any type of increase in rates, because the IMF, they actually lowered our economy numbers for the year. So she didn't think that our economy would be strong enough in order to justify increasing rates. And then this report comes out today. So, you know, it is what it is. But it doesn't take away the fact that I do believe that the stock markets are way overpriced. And we're going to see some pressures. And this is a great opportunity to be picking up some gold and silver. There was a Robert Shiller. He's a professor of economics and finance at Yale University. And he's wrote books, and he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences in 2013 for his work on asset prices and financial market behavior. And he did an interview with Goldman Sachs' Allison Nathan. And he and another person 25 years ago created a ratio, and they call it the CAPE ratio. I'm not going to go into details and define how that is configured, but it's the CAPE ratio, and which is quite
those
high.
Those how many superheroes
Well, the ratio has recently been around 27, and this indicates it is a quite high by U.S. historical standards. The only other times it has been at that high or higher were in 1929, 2000, and 2007, all moments before the market crashes. So, I mean, the ratio is defined as the real stock price divided by the 10-year average of real earnings per share. Well, so I guess it's fairly simple. But so again, another fairly.
They're telling us that stocks, the implication of the stocks are overpriced.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what he says. And by a significant degree.
Yeah. Not just a little, but a lot. You know, there's another. I don't know what's going to go on in the stock markets per se, but it's interesting to me that there are reports that the bond market, or something from KC Research, says bond markets are cracking. There's chaos in European bond markets. German 10-year bonds yields have climbed to 0.9% from the record low of 0.049%. In other words, they have climbed from about 0.5%. No, not even that, 0.05% to 0.9%. And what interests me about that, and something maybe you can explain to me, is that really It's an increase of 18 times, going from 0.049 to 0.9, increases 18 times. That's huge on a percentage basis. Oh my gosh, the price has gone up 18 times. On the other hand, it's only gone from 0.05 of a percent to 0.9 of a percent. It's hard for me to understand why numbers that are seemingly so small strike fear into people's hearts. And is that something that you can explain to me, Melody?
Well, I mean, I think anytime you have any sort of a drastic move in a percentage shows that there's something that is happening behind the scenes, that you're having this activity, you're having this volatility. And with volatility, we all know what the world is based on. It is confidence. And, you know, when you see these cracks, I mean, no matter how small or drastic it might seem from one to another person, there's still this volatility is showing. And, I mean, look at our 10-year yield bond. It went up to, you know, 2.40. I mean, it was, what, a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, it was 1.86 or somewhere around in that area. So, again, you see, and the bond market, you know, that's one that's probably one of the major indicators. It's probably one of the biggest bubbles. And so when that begins to crack and you see this volatility, absolutely it does mean something.
The way I'm reading this, they may talk about the stock market. But from what I'm able to read and understand, people are really more concerned about the bond market.
So
they
huge.
Think that's where the stuff will initially hit the fan, is in the bond market, and later, in part as consequence, in part because the pressures are already there, later we'll see something adverse in the stock market.
Well, you have the bond market that is tied to so many of those derivatives. I mean, those derivatives are, you know, hooked back pocket to these bonds. And so you not only have one market, but you have two markets that are strongly tied to one another.
Well, I understand. To me, I mean, I don't pay much attention to the bond market simply because it's all about paper. And I've been telling people, you understand, avoid paper. It's going to turn up to, it's going to catch on fire before this is done, and it'll disappear on you. I don't pay much attention to it. I mean, I don't care what's going on. I don't particularly care what's happening in the bond market and even in the stock markets. They're interesting to me, but they're not critical. For me, the world is going to turn into a gold-based investment opportunity. That's what's here, in my opinion, and that's where I've essentially placed my bet. All right, I think gold is going to do something dramatic, so I don't pay much attention to paper. To me, it's white noise.
Our listeners are involved more in paper than what they probably should be.
Well, I get that.
And this is why it's important, because they're involved. And I agree with you. I don't own paper. But in order for me to understand gold and silver, I have to understand paper and how it relates to gold and why gold is going to continue to be where you need to be. And as you know, someone talked to me today about Tolving. Tolving brought, he was the gold dealer in California, and for years he pretty much sold everything at spot price or wholesale price. Everyone in the industry knew that it was just a matter of time, because no one could understand or figure out how someone could sell the items at the low price.
He was selling to retail customers at prices that were so low that it was hard to see how he was making a profit.
But the whole industry knew. We tried to warn everybody, but that just doesn't matter, because people still went there and they thought that if they could save, you know, a penny or two, that was the great deal of the century, and they continued to funnel money into here, and it turns away that he walked, you know, he ended up bankruptcy, and people lost their money to the tune of, what, $18+ million. That doesn't seem like a lot. Who knows? Maybe it was, you know,
well,
$18 million.
Government terms. Government terms, $18 million is
nothing. But in the gold market, it's a very big, it's a very big number in the gold market.
Yeah.
Very big number. But you keep warning people. There's no way he can do this. There's no way he can continue. The whole industry knew. Everybody was warning. But people just, you know, it's funny. I guess it's just human nature.
It's not just human nature. It's also the difference between a speculator and an investor. If you look at someone who's making money the way you're describing, this guy is offering extraordinary deals. All right. You can take that deal right now. And in theory, you come out money ahead, even though you may suspect you're dealing with a crook. You may suspect it, and so you're thinking, eh, but I can get the deal before this guy goes to prison. I mean, that's the way people think if they're speculating. They're saying, yeah, I know things are strange, but I don't want to look at the long-term view. I just want, how much money can I make this afternoon? How much money can I make in the next 5 minutes? And they're willing to take a shot. They're willing to absorb these small increments of risk if they just take them on a daily or hourly.
And that's what we're seeing in the stock market. The point was the comparison. They're willing to, you know, but they don't heed the warnings. And then you have a loss. I mean, look how many times I warned people of Pat Kiley. You know, everybody forgets. We all have short memories, and it was the same thing. You know, the promises of huge returns. You're never going to lose any money, and this is where you're going to, you know, be the millionaire or the billionaire of the future. And I guess we're all guilty as to some degree of...
We all have our fair share of greed. And some of us even have a fair share of larceny in our blood. And if you can make a fast buck, you know, people are inclined to do that. And that's not surprising. It's human nature in a lot of regards. But just the same, when you get an entire economy that's based on a fast buck rather than production, you are headed for an unhappy ending. Now, admittedly, it may take 15, 20 years before you get to that unhappy ending. But you're going to get there as long as you just keep pursuing. As a nation, you pursue that fast buck. Make it. Get that dollar. Doesn't matter what you have to do. Just make it. The consequences are going to take the nation down, but they aren't going to take it down this afternoon. And therefore, people think, if I can make a fast buck this afternoon, you know, I'll become an honest man next week. Next week, I'll be honest and I'll work on my character, but this afternoon, I'm going to make a fast buck. It's part of, it's a natural part of life, but it is inevitably self-destructive. It's the sort of thing where it creates problems in the future. You think you're getting over in the present, but the problems are piling up, and the day comes, there's a day of reckoning, and all of us have lived through, you know, if you're listening to this program, you're on this program, you're old enough to, you can remember when things were running well, and no one particularly paid attention to whether they were running morally or immorally, or they were based on production or consumption, debt, taxes, whatever, it didn't matter. It was going okay, so no one looked, no one complained, no one observed. We figured, we kind of knew that someday in the future, some future generation would get stuck with the bill for all our greed and our stupidity. But little did we know that we would be that future generation. And here we are. We thought we're going to leave it to the kids or the grandkids. No, we're going to get our fair share of it now. And it just strikes me as kind of funny. There are people who are saying, what? You mean we actually have to pay for our free lunches? Yeah, that's right. You're going to get... I thought we're going to leave that to the kids or the grandchildren. No, you're going to have to pay for your own free lunches. It's a surprise. It's a shock. People feel betrayed by their congressman because they're going to have to pay for their own free lunches. But turns out we are coming on that moment. All right? Thought it might be another 20 years or whatever. Looks like it's a lot closer than that. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thethepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners we got some great prices here at Discount Gold and Silver. To call us and to visit our website at dgscoins.com. DGS for Discount Gold Silver Coins, C-O-I-N-S, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to our programs that are archived there on a daily and monthly basis. So make sure you get there. And Greece, Al, we have to talk about Greece a little bit. It's so funny.
I don't know if we absolutely have to talk
about Greece. Yes, we do.
Well, it seems like it's one of those things, politically correct. It's a politically correct subject. Even though, what can you say about Greece? The thing, the wheels are coming off the wagon. They're trying to duck this one way or the other and extend and pretend, a term that the new Greek government coined earlier when it was elected. They say we're bankrupt. They came out and they said, look, we're bankrupt. We don't have the money. This whole thing is just extend and pretend. And they were against extend and pretend. Okay, but now they're not necessarily against it. Now they're willing to at least extend in hopes that they're going to get another essentially free handout from the European banks and investors. But it can't be. It's not going to be paid back. I mean, why does the European Central Bank, why do European investors want to support Greece in this matter? They're technically bankrupt. If you know somebody's bankrupt, does it make good sense to lend money to them? Here's my brother-in-law. He's not just broke, he's bankrupt. But before the court actually declares him bankrupt, I'm going to lend him another $100,000. That make any sense? That's what's happening with Greece. And here's an article from Reuters. Greece cannot accept lenders' latest proposal. All right, that's according to their Minister of Economics. It says Greece cannot accept the latest proposal for a cash for reforms deal put on the table by the international lenders, but was prepared to negotiate a compromise. Okay, they're prepared to negotiate a compromise. What kind of compromise can you negotiate with in terms of lending money to someone who's bankrupt? How about we lend you some more money and you never pay the existing debt? And you never pay us back. You agree that you'll never pay us back what we're going to lend you right now. I mean, it's just comical to me. Greece delayed a key debt payment to the International Monetary Fund that was due today, as Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras demanded changes to tough terms from international creditors for aid to stave off default. Look, I'm bankrupt, and if you want me to pay my next mortgage payment, you're going to have to lend me some more money. That's essentially what they're saying. Coming to the bank and saying the only way I can pay the make the mortgage payment is for you to lend me more money.
I know that, and I didn't mean to belabor this whole thing, just to touch on it briefly, because we touch on this periodically. But to me, what I find interesting is they're not really making any demands. I know the IMF, Greece wanted to bundle the four payments. Supposedly they had the money for the first payment, so they're just delaying.
No, they didn't.
That's what they said anyway. But even if they did or whether they didn't, they're not going to have it at the end of the month either. No. So the whole point is, you wonder why the European central banks, why Germany, why they're not putting any other pressures. Now they're talking about elections. And, I mean, it really is. So either Tsipras has something up his sleeve, and he spoke with Putin this afternoon, and, whether that means anything or not, how long are they going to allow this to carry on until finally they cut the rope to Greece? Until they finally say, Greece, you know what? Have it your way. Adios.
Well, it's the way it's going to have to work out because, again, they are, instead of paying off, what, 300 million or something like that, right now they're going to pay off 1.6 billion at the end of the month.
Yeah.
No, they're not. All they've done is buy another 3 weeks. That's all they've done. And by the end of the month, they're going to have another deal, maybe, where they're going to promise to pay off the month after that or a quarter after that or who knows when. But the deal is, if you give us some more money, we promise, cross our hearts and hope to die, that we'll be paying the debt back to you shortly. It's not going to be repaid. That's the problem. And in that regard, it's similar to what we have in the United States. A national debt of $18 trillion that they admit to, and Congressional Budget Office has said, and an economist, William Kotlikoff, have calculated that the true national debt, including unfunded liabilities, actually runs in the neighborhood of $200 trillion. It's not going to be paid. Okay? Whatever you're looking at in Greece right now, you're going to see something similar here in the United States. The debt is too great for us to repay. One way or another, the creditors, that's the people that are holding those pieces of paper that we call bonds. They're holding those bonds when the government is so deep in debt that it can't possibly pay the existing debt. You know, this is part of the reason why I look at bonds, and to me they're just foolishness. I admit you can play the market, the bond market, and you can make money this afternoon or this week or whatever. But it's like dealing with pieces of paper that are soaked in gasoline at a marshmallow roast. Sooner or later, a spark is going to catch your little gasoline-impregnated bonds on fire, and they're going to turn to ashes. And the same thing's going on in Greece. I don't know. Again, they're trying to buy time in terms of weeks, and they'll probably get it. They'll get a deal going here where they stall paying for another 3 weeks. And then what? A new deal where they stall paying for another 10 days? And then another new deal where they stall paying for another 5 days? And then 72 hours? And then instead of paying today, we'll pay tomorrow in the morning? How many more deals are they going to cut before somebody just says, look, they can't pay the bill. Now what? And again, I remain unconvinced that Greece is that big a deal. I mean, I'm not convinced. It may be that it can trigger a bunch of adverse consequences, but I strongly suspect that if Greece defaults on its debt, by the time the dust settles in, 90 days, 6 months, people are going to kind of realize this was maybe much ado about nothing. I am suspicious, and I can't give you evidence to support the contention. But I suspect that what's happening over there is the bankers don't want people to understand that you can stop paying your bills or your debts, and the world isn't going to come to an end. Little Iceland got away with it. They said, we're not paying. Guess what? The world didn't come to an end. And Greece might be able to do something similar. It's much bigger than Iceland, but it's still a small economy. And if Greece, all of a sudden, it turns out that they don't just completely collapse and burst into flames when they don't pay the debt, then what? What will Portugal say? What's Spain going to say? I think that's the problem. I think the contagion that's associated with the Greek default is not a matter of people, of dominoes falling. Greece defaults and the dominoes start falling and, oh my gosh, the whole world goes into a depression. Well, maybe that's what's going to happen. I don't know. I can't give you prophecy on this. But what I think is that if Greece defaults and it doesn't just degenerate into chaos. I know they'll have a difficult 18, 24 months. But what if the rest of the world says, wait a second, you mean we could get out from under all our debt? And we could, all we have to do is go through 24 months of difficult times and we're back on our feet? It might be that default is the most rational and humane and sensible solution for Greece. Just do it and be done with it and reestablish your government, your economy. Try to do something sensible. Try to be productive. Try to be responsible. And maybe it'll work out for you. But they keep on trying to honor a debt that they can't pay. It's just crazy. It's irrational. It can't work. All they can do is extend and pretend. They're going to extend the problem by another 3 weeks, by another 10 days, whatever, while they pretend that Greece can somehow, some way, pay its bills. They can't. Why not deal with the truth? You know, blah, blah, blah. So what do you think, Melody? Should Greece continue to extend and pretend, or just you know, pull the bandage off and get on with it.
Well, of course that's what they should do, and of course that's what should the rest of the European Union should do, is, you know, just let them go. But,
You know, it's the European Union. You know, this is the sort of thing, if Greece defaults, it's not just about the money. It casts doubt on the wisdom of the European Union and the European Central Bank. How did they lend all this money to Greece in the first place? I mean, this isn't just a problem where Greece has been irresponsible. How did these lenders lend all this money to Greece in the first place? How were they foolish enough to do this? They were irresponsible. They were imprudent. And sooner or later, that's going to come out. They're going to say, what the heck were you people doing lending all that money to Greece? Couldn't you see they would never pay it back? I mean, the lenders in this instance are as responsible as the borrower. It's like lending money to an 8-year-old kid and then foreclosing on the kid and complaining that the kid was irresponsible. No, it's up to the lender to do his due diligence and find out if the potential borrower is actually likely to be able to repay the debt. The fact that Greece is headed for a default is evidence that there's something fundamentally flawed in the way the European Union thinks, fundamentally flawed perhaps in the way the European Union is set up. It raises doubts. Can the European Union survive? Can it function? And I don't know what the answer to that question is, but I suspect that the European Union doesn't want to face those questions. And I think that's part of the reason they do extend and pretend. Let's pretend the Greeks can pay. Oh, what's next, Melody?
I believe we have a caller, Jim from West Virginia.
Well, Jim.
Hello. You know, I'm maybe really bad guy for calling in so much, but I think we really need to clean up our language. Everybody has heard of people in inner cities have been bankrupted by loan sharks. What we need to understand is the IMF, European Central Bank, they're nothing more than loan sharks. They're not central banks. They're counterfeiting operations. So these counterfeiting loan sharks have managed to bankrupt Greece and every other country they've been in, including ours. So why don't we understand very simply, start calling them loan sharks, counterfeiting loan sharks. Iceland told the counterfeiting loan sharks, no, we don't owe you anything. Now, the Greeks will do that. And if we start calling these people for what they are, the Federal Reserve counterfeiting company, the IMF loan sharking operation, perchance, if the Greeks would just tell them to buzz off like Iceland did, and people did that worldwide, the whole thing would come down. The Greeks need to tell the Europeans, sort of like, listen, we don't owe you a dang thing. You owe us, and there's no way you can repay the damage you've done to the European Central Bank. Something to think about, okay?
Yeah, I agree.
I think I've said enough. So I just had to knock the ball out of the park as hard as I could. But let's call it what it is, okay, folks? We love you no matter what you do, because you're doing it right. Catch you later. Be good.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Well, I think Jim is right, you know, and it goes to, you know, fundamental questions. It's not just about, is Greece bankrupt? Ultimately, it's going to go to things like, what is money? We may have to face that question, and a lot of people are going to say, what? I know what money is. It's something that spends. Huh? And these pieces of paper must be money because I can go buy a new truck with it or dinner with it or whatever. And there is so much more to money than just does it spend and how do you count it. We are living in a world where we go to these banks, and Jim calls them counterfeiters, and he's basically correct. We wind up borrowing what? What did we borrow from the bank? The bank doesn't even have any real money. And what they do have, they're spinning out of thin air. So what is it that we are borrowing? And is it, does it justify this debt? And yeah, it's, it, you can't just say the debts need to all be written off. But someone needs to address what is the reality of these debts. I'm going to lend you $1 million. Here, I'm going to give you an IOU for $1 million. Now what? That IOU isn't worth anything. And yet we treat it as if it were, and the world continues to function on that lie, and as long as it does, it makes us more and more vulnerable. Let's take another break for our last set of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Here's an article from the magazine The Atlantic. And the headline is, What's Causing Baltimore's Crime Spike? And the article reads, in part, Baltimore residents seem to be facing an impossible dilemma. They can have abusive policing or hardly any at all. Now, the first option was abundantly well-documented in the days after Freddie Gray's death. The history of rough rides and brutality, the repeated inattention to emergencies, the unwise tactical decisions. Since the city of Baltimore exploded, then calmed down, residents are starting to get a feel for their other choice. All right, they were angry about the cops, said the cops were too violent. Right, we burned down part of the city as an expression of protest against police violence. And they continue and say, as the Baltimore Sun noted over the weekend, May saw the most murders in any month in Baltimore since 1972. Non-lethal shootings have gone up sharply as well, but arrests are down across the city. There were 1,177 arrests in May of 2015, last month. 1,177 compared to 3,801 arrests in May of 2014. What they're saying is that in response to the riots that took place after the police were implicated in the death of Freddie Gray, the police have actually pulled in their horns, and they are arresting one-third as many people as they arrested last year in the same month. Now, that's just incredible. Arrests have fallen by two-thirds. Given the consequence, and this appears to be the consequence, given the consequence of increased shootings and homicides without police making these arrests, it's got to make a lot of people appreciate the police who were formerly critical, right? A lot of people are beginning to realize, hey, maybe it's a strange situation, but it leads me to my one-liner, okay? A little bit of Henny Youngman going on here. Cops, you can't live with them and you can't live without them. What do you think, Melody? Is it ready for prime time or not?
Well, I know, and I know in your mind you think it is.
Well, it's just, yeah, that's right. In my mind, yeah, that's a fact.
But that's all that matters to you, right?
Well, not entirely. I'm interested in whether, you know, whether the rest of the audience appreciates.
Well, I saw an interview this morning, and it was about New York also. And, you know, the new mayor there took away the, you know, the search if you're walking down the street. I can't remember what the exact name they tagged to it. But, you know, if you were suspicious and so forth, they would search to see if you had a weapon and so forth. He took that away, and now they're beginning to see, you know, their crime increase because of more murders are increasing because, you know, people are, and it's like, it is a balancing act, Al.
Well, you know, in New York, though, my understanding is the only way you're going to walk down the street with a gun is if
you're a criminal
illegal.
Anyway. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And if they're not going to check for, if they've, insofar as they outlaw guns for all the people who are law abiding, if they're not going to check on the streets for those that are breaking the law and carrying a gun, they're not going to take these guys off the streets. This is an advantage to the criminals. And if you want to offset it, what do? You legalize guns. You say, okay, the rest of you people in New York, you can get yourself a concealed carry permit or even an open carry permit, right? And if we ever got back to real freedom in this country, you wouldn't need a permit at all. You want to carry a gun? Carry a gun. And now the crooks understand, holy cow, all the rest of these people we used to be able to rob with impunity, now they're carrying guns, they might shoot us. So the point I'm trying to make is that they are perhaps seeing an upswing in crime because they're not checking for guns, but hey, if it's presumed that everyone has guns, not just the crooks themselves will start to mind their manners. So this is a function, the New York problem is perhaps a function of gun control. What's next, Melody?
That's all you have on Baltimore?
Nothing. No, there's not much else that I can think of. I just did that article as a lead-in to that one-liner. Cops, you can't live with them and you can't live without them.
Well, I'm sorry. Anyway, moving right along.
Uh-huh. All right, here's Gross. He's talking about the bond route here in the United States. We've already talked a little bit about the bond problem in Europe. Some associated with volatility and so on, but problems taking place globally. And Bill Gross, who is runs Janus Global Unconstrained Bond Fund, the former manager of PIMCO Total Return Fund. He is a heavy hitter on Wall Street, well-known individual. And he says, now this is interesting, and it doesn't lead up to a one-liner, at least not one that I've thought of yet. He says the decline on the market, the bond market in the United States and globally, okay, it's part of a global sell-off led by German bunds and fueled by what traders say is a lack of liquidity. Meaning, if there's no liquidity, it means you can't sell you whatever it is you've invested in. You can't just walk out on the street and expect to sell your bonds. You can't walk out on the street and sell your stocks. You got to go to a market. But within the market, if I have stock in a company at a particular price, there's probably somebody out there who will buy it. I make it, I call my stockbroker or do what I have to do, and I say, I'd like to sell 100,000 shares of stock. And somebody says, I'd like to buy it. And we reach a price, and it's a pretty quick process. Insofar as I can quickly sell my bonds, my stocks, whatever, at any given moment, there's plenty of liquidity. Meaning I can turn my bond, my paper debt instrument, I can turn it into cash at a moment's notice. When they run out of liquidity, I go there and I say, I'd like to sell 100,000 shares. Anybody want to buy 100,000 shares? Yoo-hoo! Anybody buying? If I don't hear any voice other than the echo of my own, you know, request, anybody want to buy? Anybody want to buy? Anybody want to buy? If I don't get a response on that, we don't have any liquidity, and I can't turn my paper into cash. That causes people to become anxious. Now they've got an investment that they might be locked into, and what happens if the market suddenly takes a dramatic fall? You know, if I'm sitting in the market and the market is at 18,000, the Dow, and I've got stock in the Dow, and the Dow drops 100 points, I say, oh, I got to get out of here. If the market is liquid, I can sell my stock at 17,900, and I can, and my loss is limited to 100 points. But if there's no liquidity, and the market drops 100 points, and I say, I think I better get out of here, and I find out I can't. Nobody wants to buy. No liquidity. That means I may be trapped in that market. It could fall to 16,000 or 15,000. And I'm sitting there saying, will anybody please buy? Please buy. And nobody's going to buy because there's no liquidity. Well, the point is this scares people. When they realize, uh-oh, I can't sell my stuff, it makes them say, okay, I was going to sell and just take a 100-point loss, but instead of that, I'm going to take a 500-point loss because I got to get out of this. Well, as people are willing to take bigger and bigger losses because they want to get out, they contribute to a decline, and they can precipitate a real panic because people are willing to sell for dramatic reductions in price because they can't easily, there's no liquidity, they can't move their investment at whatever price is normal, right? Won't sell. So in any case, they're complaining in this article, they're saying, look, the lack of liquidity is driving a global sell-off in bonds. But Bill Gross says, I recognize the tremendous liquidity problems and the ups and downs on a daily basis or even on a minute basis. And it scares the hell out of me. This is Bill Gross being quoted in an interview on Thursday. Okay? If he's watching this on a minute basis, he's not an investor. He's a speculator. Investors are taking a long-term view. They're looking, they're buying, what am I going to get right now that's going to be a good investment a year from now or 5 years from now or whatever? Speculators are worried about the minute by minute. Gross is apparently a speculator, but he does say these liquidity problems scare the hell out of him. He says, I don't think we're in a bear bond market just yet. He doesn't think the market has gone into a bear market, but at the same time he says the market scares the hell out of me. I don't think those two statements are consistent. I think Bill is pumping sunshine when he says, I don't think we're in a bear market yet. And I think the reality is the market scares the hell out of him. I think that's the fundamental reality. I think that's the truth of the matter, and the idea that we're not in a bear market yet. Well, it might be technically true, but if it is, we're going to be there pretty soon. If we're not there already, we'll be there soon enough. All right? He also says he thinks elsewhere, he says he thinks that the markets are at a fair price right now. And yet he says the market scares the hell out of him. Why would anybody be, and why would anyone be scared by a market that was producing a fair price? We've got a price here. The people that are selling, sellers say, yeah, this is a fair price. Buyers say, yeah, this is a fair price. Is that a bad thing? Is there some reason there to be frightened? I don't see it. I think the truth of the article here is that Bill Gross finds the current circumstances frightening. And if he's correct about that, you know, all of us need to pay close attention. Prices, it doesn't matter. The problem is not whether the current prices are or are not fair. The problem is that we may be on the verge of a massive fall in bond prices. That's what the Bill Gross interview suggests to me. He's worried that this thing's going to drop like a stone, and not so long from now. He's worried that we are headed into a real bear market, and then if we do a bear market in bonds, some people think the bear market in bonds might trigger a massive fall in the stock market, and all of it, and certainly the bonds, if they drop dramatically, should trigger a significant rise in the price of gold. So, what do you think, Melody? Are we sitting on the edge of calamity, or is this just Chicken Little talking about the sky is falling?
No, I mean, he was the biggest bond trader working at PIMCO and everything, and, you know, he tried to warn everybody about the bonds, and, you know, he left, his other, you know, cohort left PIMCO prior to him and so forth. So, you know, it's just like that's what they do. You know, they want to leave before they get into trouble. They want to leave before the market makes them out to be the bad guys, and now they're trying to warn people and tell them of their concerns and so forth. So, you know, it's, you know. But certainly
I think if he's telling the truth that the system, that the current market scares the hell out of him, and that's his language, if he's telling the truth, and I think he is on that regard, then, all right, it doesn't mean that everything's going to collapse and blow up in everybody's face. That's not what the problem is, necessarily. But again, it's another one of those leaves in the breeze that tells us that we are close to significant problems. And if we are, it is incumbent on all of us to prepare as best we can to deal with those problems, which may or may not actually happen. Right? But it's a little like taking a flight in an airplane without a parachute. It's not necessarily your best choice. Let's get a parachute so we can be safe. Huh? Maybe we won't have to use it, but on the other hand, maybe we will. If we do, best parachute you can get right now financially is probably gold. We're out of time for the program. We're out of time for the week. We will be back on Monday. Melody and I will be back at that time. I hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too fast.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. Money in a rich man's world. Money, money, money.